the glass in left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yale. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get things going. It is Wednesday, February 5th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg from our Groundworks downtown studio. Hopefully your week is going along nicely. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. What's up, Vix?
Nothing, just fiddling with some headphones. Finally got them to fit my... I was going to say thin skull. I have a small head. I'm like a 7 1/8. I used to be a 7.
I also have a small head.
Anyways, I had to fiddle with the headphones. A wire was getting in the way. I'm like, Wes, what did you do to these things?
Yeah, we got Vicks. You give them two games. Let's go.
No dice.
Kate, you've been covering this team about the same amount of time I have.
No, that's a lie, but I'm in double digits for years. Well, I'm not an 06 guy. I'm like 2010.
We've been covering the team a long time.
Yes.
I think like those losses, like Tuesday's loss to Toronto, are the ones that stick in the craw of Flames fans the most, of the Flames organization the most. Text line's open at 960-960. If you'd like to jump in and respond and chat with us throughout the hour, if you're listening live, like those nights when the visiting team comes into the dome and runs the show and the visiting crowd or fans of the visiting team are louder than the fans of the Flames, like those are the nights that I think really leave the sourest taste in the mouth. And that's not to suggest that the 8-3 loss against Tampa earlier this year didn't leave a sour taste, or some of the other home losses to like Nashville or the most recent one prior to Tuesday against Detroit don't also leave sour taste in the mouth. But when Montreal comes in here and win and you're hearing the ole, 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 when they're showing on Sportsnet how loud the Go Leafs Go chant was in the third period, when Edmonton comes in here, when Vancouver comes in here and wins, I think these are the nights that really sting the most in this market. And so you add that, like that fact, onto the actual frustrations of the way the game got played on Tuesday in a 6-3 loss to Toronto. And that one felt like it felt like it hit more of a nerve than other losses have this season. Is that a fair characterization?
That's fair. And I'm going to go on a little side tangent and implore Flames fans, when you have the Habs, when you have the Leafs, when you have the Oilers in town specifically, don't let them get to the chance first. Bust out right at puck drop a Go Flames Go. I've noticed this for 10 years, where when you have one of these teams in that come and either fill your building or half fill your building or quarter fill your building, they're the ones to get to the chance first, and then Flames fans counter with Go Flames Go or Oilers suck, if it happens to be the Oilers. Get to it first. Establish your dominance in your own building. That's like what you demand out of the Flames. You demand that they set the tone for games like this. Fans, set the tone. Don't wait for Leafs fans to chant Go Leafs Go. Drown them out right from the start. And I guarantee you that'll permeate both through the building and onto the ice for the Flames. Because I noticed that I can't imagine a scenario where somebody on that bench for the Flames doesn't notice that the first chant of the game is always a visiting chant.
And I get it. Like, this is a city, unlike a lot of other cities. I mean, Toronto, a lot of people not from Toronto, and you know, widely known as maybe the most multicultural city on the planet. But I mean, Calgary's a city that has a lot of people not from Calgary or not born in Calgary. And so people who decided to come out west from Ontario likely grew up cheering for the Leafs or the Habs. And a lot of people have come west because of how expensive it is to live in the greater Vancouver area. And so a lot of people have migrated to Calgary over the last 20, 25, 30, 35 years. And so I get it. Like, especially you know, Edmonton's a little bit different because it's 30 minutes down the road. There's obviously a lot of Oilers fans here, but you know what? There's a lot of Flames fans that go to Oilers games, right? So, like, it's loud. It's loud from a visiting team perspective there. But in this city, and it's not like it happens in Edmonton. It happens in Vancouver. But for so many people, this is the only time they get to see their team in person. So you kind of understand why it's such an event and why the dome feels so much different and why, to your point, you know, the road fans are so much more boisterous right from the get-go. But it doesn't take away your point. That,
well, if you've got 19...
Go in there with an objective and accomplish it, right?
If there's 19,289 in the dome for a Leafs game, it's still going to be 10,000 Flames fans at minimum. Set the tone. Be the change you want to see. I don't know how that necessarily applies to this, but I wanted to say
you
it for some reason.
You miss 99% of the shots that you don't take, or 100% of the
shots. Yeah, I think it's 100.
No, it was from Gretzky. That's why I said 99.
Okay. Well played. Well played. I thought it was Michael Scott.
I didn't do it on
that's
purpose.
That's on me. I just think that, like, and I understand your point.
Why don't you make like a leaf and split? You're like, no, that one's just a little outside there.
I get why the visiting fans are louder to start. Because, as you mentioned, it's an event. It's more of a night out. You get 41 home games for Flames fans. You get one for Toronto if you're a Maple Leafs fan living in Calgary. But you still match the numbers, so match the intensity, if you will, and go from there. Because part of the reason why, to get back to your point off the top, is why these games are frustrating losses. It's because another team comes into your building, another fan base invades your building, and then puts the boots to you. That stings. That's why that stings. From my perspective, that's why those would sting more than a Tuesday night loss against the Florida Panthers.
Why don't you make like a banana and buzz off?
I'm not liking any of these. Like, I understand what you're doing. And if there's anybody here that should appreciate like the quasi dad nature of the jokes you're spitting out is me. I'm not there.
Well, I'm more making fun of those who make the dad jokes and
which
then
is me
getting them wrong.
Well, I don't usually get those wrong.
No,
I get a lot of things wrong.
That's what I'm saying. I'm getting them wrong. It's like when you try to talk about like when I talk about basketball, I really try to make it seem like I have no idea about anything with the sport, and Shan gets really upset.
Do you sometimes ask him why that wasn't an offside call?
Like, Shan, why can't we double dribble? Like, why? I don't understand. No, I didn't say turn the mic, huh?
Cold-blooded.
Why can't we double dribble in basketball? Why can't I just run with the ball? I think that you should be able to travel. That is my input on the future.
LeBron does it anyways.
Hey-oh! I just like it.
Do you think Shan's rattled now?
Shan Vergie's blood is boiling, and it makes me so happy that it takes this little. By the way, Shan Cam, our outstanding producers this hour. Then on top of all that we just talked about, it was a really frustrating game.
Yep.
Because if you're going to go up against a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs, who have the type of firepower, even without leading scorer Mitch Marner in the lineup, you're still talking about one of the most offensively blessed teams in the NHL. If you're going to beat that team at your rink or their rink, you need to manage the puck. You need to limit the penalties you take. You need to be tight defensively. You need to play a relatively simple game, and you need to play to your identity. And I don't think the Flames did any of that.
I was about to say, I was hoping you would pause or look at me because I was looking at you funny. I'm like, which one of those do you think they accomplished the most Tuesday night?
None of them. I mean, they made some really, really poor decisions off the puck. They made some really, really poor decisions with the puck that in concert led to goals in the back of their net. They took some really, really frustrating penalties, especially in the early part of the second period, that allowed Toronto to start feeling it, because I think Toronto was a little frustrated after the first period. They controlled at 5-on-5 a good chunk of the opening frame, but a 5-on-3 had them down 1-0, and I think there was a little frustration. And instead, the Flames take a couple of penalties in quick succession early in the second, and just like that, it's 2-1. Now the Maple Leafs are feeling it. Now the Maple Leafs are rolling. Then Sharangovich redirects home the Uyghur shot on the next 5-on-3. It's 2-2. And then two pretty egregious, poor poor, I guess what I'm trying to think of the right word, poor sequences of decisions lead to two goals in the back of the net. So I know everybody is all over Tyson Barry, and for good reason. Barry struggled big time. But I mean, the goal that ends up as the go-ahead goal where the Maple Leafs didn't relinquish the lead again, did Barry make, should Barry be moving down the wall at this stage of his career with the boots being the liability they are at times? Maybe not. Like, maybe Tyson Barry shouldn't be coming down the wall the same way that he would have 5 years ago. But at the same time, that's an off-puck decision. Jonathan Huberdeau's decision to go cross ice and put, like, that was, you got to recognize who's coming down the wall if you're going to put a low percentage pass on their stick. And that's what Huberdeau did. Like, that's a mid-air pass that, sure, Nazem Kadri probably takes that. But that wasn't Nazem Kadri.
I would even go so far as to say that's such a low percentage pass that having to knock it out of the air, it's almost irrelevant who you give it to. But at the same time,
and he has to recognize,
you have to recognize that it is a guy that if this doesn't click, you're in a world of hurt.
And, because, and he has to recognize that because D-man's coming down the wall, you, unless you're putting a perfect pass cross ice, that thing's probably going the other way.
You have no support.
Next thing you know,
no forward
Braden
able to
Pahal's
cover that.
In a bad spot.
Absolutely. So another fan base invades your arena, invades our press box, big media contingent, probably the biggest in the NHL remaining. That's a fact.
Never Montreal.
Doesn't even matter to the case. But, and then you pile it on with a lot of self-inflicted wounds that you mentioned in terms of that checklist of what the Calgary Flames need to do to be successful. None of it was accomplished against Toronto. In fact, you took it too far of a step the other direction, and too many penalties, too many odd man rushes resulting from too many self-inflicted wounds, and a track meet game that you're certainly not going to be able to match against the Toronto Maple Leafs team without the fourth leading scorer in the NHL, still absolutely stacked with firepower. That's what you get. That's the result you get on a Tuesday night when you do all that. Yeah. Or don't do that.
Want to read some texts at 960-960 just on what we saw before we get to another one of the topics to kick off this hour. Steinberg and Vickers. Shub says, Flames fans can only blame themselves. I've noticed for years now that it's super quiet in there. Too often they allow other fans to come in and take over. Again, the only time that it really happens is with those teams that I mentioned. This says from Brad, Leafs. God, I despise that team. This says, I thought I didn't care about the outcomes of the game last night, but then Amulet Boy scored and I ripped my headphones out of the gym. Of course, that from Francesca, that's a reference to John Tavares.
I forgot about that. And it took me probably a half second longer than it should have to recognize what that text was about. And then naturally, I chuckled.
Ian and Cranbrook, last night's game's a wake-up call to where this team is in the big picture. Long way to be competitive with the upper echelon. Talent kills. We just saw what this team is missing. Finishers. And what I think we saw is what happens when, and I by no means, please let me preface that this is not putting this game on Dustin Wolf. But I think it's fair to say Wolf did not have a game-stealing night. That wasn't the Winnipeg game, right? Like, he didn't steal that game. So unless Dustin Wolf, and you can't count on even the best goaltenders in the league, like Dustin Wolf is this year, to be in game-stealing form night in, night out, what we saw last night is that if your goalie is not in game-stealing form, and you're not playing the way you need to play against teams with a significant talent edge or firepower edge like the Maple Leafs have, stuff like that can happen. And then on top of that, you didn't have one of your top defensemen, making it that much more imperative that you can't be making some of the mistakes that we saw on Tuesday. Without Kevin Ball and with that blue line as thin as it is right now, you know, if you're Tyson Barry or if you're Rasmus Anderson, you've got to be, you just got to be way more smart about when you're making your decisions to get involved down low. I mean, again, the game-winning goal from Nylander was a complete schmozzle of communication because Anderson decides to come back down low and none of the forwards seem to, like, either there wasn't enough communication on both ends or there wasn't recognition or whatever, But that leads to a 3-on-1 the other way and a late William Nylander goal that ends up being the difference.
Yeah, and I'm going to quickly touch on Dustin Wolf because he allows 5-on-29, but 2 were power play goals and 2 were 2-on-1s with pinpoint accuracy shooting. So the stat line doesn't look pretty for Dustin Wolf. It the real life visual of how he played was a lot more flattering. But yeah, if you would have needed probably the best game of his career to come out with 2 points in that game.
Derek in Edmonton says he likes my failed dad jokes. So there. Grant says, I think it's time they trade for a young left-handed D. I listen to every pod like you know, but they need Byram. They need him. Having Uyghur and Anderson's fine, but without Ball, they have a full lineup of AHL D-men. Tuesday was a perfect example. I'm not saying mortgage the future, but it would fit perfect in the top four. I see Anderson and Ball and Uyghur and Byram as two duos that could compete for a Stanley Cup. Last night was so frustrating, I'm still heated. Look, I would have no problem if they went out and got Bowen Byram. I think it'd be a great fit. I just don't know if Buffalo's looking at doing that right now. In fact, I've read a couple of times that Byram might be one of the guys they're most invested in keeping just because of how good the fit's been there with him. That being said, never say never. I'm not in that market, so I'm not acutely in tune with it. But if you could get Bowen Byram all day, I also like the idea of Matias Samuelsson, who's signed at a nice deal as a left shot D out of Buffalo. I think there are options for sure.
It's funny because I was kind of kicking around, and we don't need to go long on this, about, you know, age-appropriate defensemen the Flames could look at acquiring. Matias Samuelsson was on my list, 24-year-old left shot. Ice time is down 2 minutes a year. Or 2 minutes a game, pardon me, year over year. That cap hit of 4.3 goes till 2029, 2030. It checks a lot of boxes.
This reads, I agree they need elite talent. However, when the Kings went to the Stanley Cup final as the 8th seed, they didn't have elite talent at that time. They grew into elite people. They just had a team that got it done. I would disagree rather vehemently. I believe you have 3 elite pieces on that team that went to the Stanley Cup final, and they were elite at the time. That was some of the best Anze Kopitar we've ever seen. That was Drew Doughty very shortly after winning Olympic gold or between Olympic golds. And Jonathan Quick, who was at his best.
Top 5 goalie in the NHL at
that
point.
So, yeah, I would disagree vehemently that they didn't have elite talent on that Kings team in what that would be, 2012 and 2014, yep, when they won the Stanley Cups. What else we got here at 960 on last night? Some of these things aren't on last night. Just kind of skimming through them here. Okay, let's move on to the next topic because it kind of was broached a little earlier when we talked about that fourth goal, right? So Rasmus Anderson out there with the top line. Anderson decides to go down low, and then it turned into like a little bit of a, I don't know, there's way too many guys.
Cluster?
A little bit of a cluster by the Maple Leafs net. And then next thing you know, puck gets turned up the other way, and they've got a 3-on-1. William Nylander on the left side takes the shot, rips it past Dustin Wolf. And so in the intermission on the Sportsnet West telecast, they caught an interaction between Nazem Kadri and Rasmus Anderson being pretty heated after that goal. You know, kind of like, what were you doing? How were you down here? Or why didn't you cover me up there? Whatever the case may be. And so got a bunch of texts about it on the Flames Talk postgame show on Tuesday night because it was obviously caught on television, and so fans saw, and it became a little bit of a topic. Eric Francis wrote about it following the game over at sportsnet.ca. I'll play the audio first, and then we can dive in. This was Ryan Huska when asked about it by EF on Tuesday night.
See a little frustration boil over after one of the goals between a couple of players on the bench. Does that concern you?
No, that happens every game. Does like players, they argue with each other back and forth, they sort it out, and then they come to a conclusion, they move on. That's one thing I love about our team, is when it does happen, they shift gears right away. So not an issue at all for me. It happens pretty much every game.
And then also asked Mackenzie Weegar, one of the emotional leaders inside that Flames locker room, same topic.
Mackenzie, you see some emotion on the bench tonight, some frustration. Does that speak to, you know, you guys are right in the thick of the race this late in the season? Is that partly why?
For sure. It's competitive guys that we got on our team. You know, we want to win every single night. We want to make the right plays every night. Guys, they not necessarily want to go at each other, but there's, you know, there's that competitive intense times in the game where guys, you know, are fiery and, you know, hold each other accountable at times, or they're pissed at themselves. And but then there's guys that pick each other up and, in situations like that. But we're a competitive group. You know, we want to win. We're fighting for a playoff spot here. And, you know, you can kind of sense it tonight.
After an exchange like on the bench, you know, mm-hmm. between players, is that discussed in the intermission? Is that
Iron out? Absolutely. We love each other in this room. You know, you come back in the room and you talk it out and, you know, have a laugh, or, you know, just forget about it. We'll get it back. And it usually doesn't last very long with this group.
Okay, thanks.
So that was, I don't know why I cut it so poorly there. That was Mackenzie Weegar on Tuesday night postgame, and Ryan Huska. Is there anything to see here? My answer is absolutely not. And because it was a topic, I'll say my piece, you say your piece, but another thing, we can move on. But because it was a topic, because people were buzzing about it online and on the text line, I love it. I love seeing that, because it's a rare glimpse into kind of the, you know, what we wouldn't see in the locker room, right? It's a rare glimpse as to how emotional a regular season game in early February in the NHL can be. And I believe both Mackenzie Weegar and Ryan Huska 2,000% when they say this stuff happens most nights, because specifically with Kadri and specifically with Anderson, these are two of your most emotionally engaged guys. These are two of the guys on your roster that play their best when their emotions are leading the way. Like Nazem Kadri drags his team into the fight. Nazem Kadri is a tone setter. Nazem Kadri plays with, I hate the term, but plays with his heart on his sleeve. That's who he is. That's who he's always been, and that continues to be who he's been, and that's what makes him a Stanley Cup champion. That's what makes him one of the best players on the Flames. And the same is true for Rasmus Anderson. Rasmus Anderson's at his best when he's fiery, when he's engaged, when his emotions are at the same level as his effort. And so in a game where things are kind of going off the rails and mistakes have led to goals in the back of your net and the arena is in tense and all of what goes into what we saw Tuesday night, yeah, damn right two guys are going to beak at each other momentarily. And just like if Steinberg and Vickers get in an argument about something on the air, well, as soon as the mics go off, it's like, okay, like it's part of the job. And so zero problem with it. Nothing to see here. It was talked about, so we're addressing it. But honestly, man, I think nothing to see here. And it just is another example of why those two guys are so important on this team. And I bet you it'll happen again, whether it's caught on camera or not caught on camera, it'll happen again. And you want that stuff to happen because emotions and investment, those are important things.
To Huska's point, it's probably happened 20, 30, 40 times this year. And this one just happened to get caught on camera. It speaks to the intensity of this group, the desire of this group, the passion of this group. Could you imagine if that play happens? Toronto goes up ice and scores, goes on to win the game. The camera pans to the bench after that goal specifically, and those two are laughing and yucking it up.
Or like, hugging.
Oh yeah. Like what would you want them to be doing? That would be disastrous if they're okay with it. One of them and have to roll back the tape and dive in and talk to the coach, talk to the players about what happened here, where was the breakdown, what went wrong, who's at fault. But if they go back to the bench after something like that in a game like this, in the environment that this was, and they're okay with a mistake that ends up in the back of their net, that's disastrous to me. It's not two teammates beaking at each other and, you know, maybe some sort of outside narrative. Oh, look, they're split or they're fractioned or they don't like each other. No. Two of your most competitive players are absolutely pissed that something happened one way, puck ends up in the back of your net in the other. Of course they're going to get heated when they're discussing it. It would be more of a concern to me if they were fine with it than if they were yelling at each other from one end of the bench to the other.
Yeah.
That's just a matter of fact.
Well,
happens every game. It'll happen every game, whether or not a camera catches it or not. Something's going to happen over the course of 60 minutes where one guy is not happy with another guy because something he did or didn't do.
Well, it was like the Jared Bednar, Nathan MacKinnon thing. Oh, that's not tenable. How are they going to? Well, you know, they want a Stanley Cup.
Well, to me, it's a little different when it's coach player versus player.
But
player.
To me, it's
stuff that happens.
To me, it's not, because again, like, it's all, I guess for in the way I'm using it, it's not different because it's all heat of the moment stuff. And in the heat of a moment, we're not talking about robots. And so, like, this isn't a bunch of AI or androids playing hockey where the emotions don't come into it. So, like, yeah, sometimes emotions are going to be a part of it, and that's what makes why some of the best moments in sports are all based on emotion. Like, think of
or sports radio.
Think of the, right? Like, and the same would be true. Like, if I did made a mistake that absolutely screwed over Shan, I would expect Shan to be like, Steinberg, what the hell, man? That really put me in a bad spot. And I'd say, Shan, I don't care because you're not my friend. But if it was, no, I would say, I would say, okay, you know, you own it. You say, oh, sorry, Shan. Like, I really screwed up. I'm sorry that put you in a bad spot. I'll really try to learn on that going forward. And so that's kind of the exact same thing. You want, if you're engaged in something and you're invested in something, then emotion, good and bad, happy and angry, that plays into it. And so heat of the moment is what makes the sport being played by humans. It's what makes the drama so enticing for those who aren't on the playing surface. Like, again, I'm thinking of like some of the most like memorable moments in my head of like just sports, right? And the first things that come to mind are all based on emotion. Like Jose Bautista's backflip.
I was just thinking that one.
Mia Hamm when the U.S. women's soccer team won the World Cup. Like stuff like that where you're like, they become iconic moments, not because they're fabricated, not because they're fraudulent, but because you're playing a sport as a human and the emotion takes over. So then why are we? So yeah, anyway, I'll read a couple texts. 960, 960. Kelly says, I would be far more worried if they were losing and just sat there with no emotions, to your point. This says, passion and desire to win is always welcome. That comes from Ryan. This from Ryan and Cochrane. Didn't the same thing happen with Kane and Draisaitl last year? And you guys were all saying there's trouble brewing in Edmonton, but when it happens here, it's positive. Ryan, I have no idea what you're talking about. So, sure, I don't even know what you're referring to. So.
Part of me wants to think that was a game in Calgary, but I'm not 100% clear of the details.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, honestly, I have zero clue.
Or I might be thinking of a Perry and somebody. Didn't that happen at some point?
I don't know. But we don't really talk about the Oilers on this show ever. Like, unless they're playing the Flames, we don't really have hot takes on the Oilers. So, Ryan, I think you're probably listening to another show. So I don't know what you're talking about. This reads, two of your leadership six holding each other accountable sets a strong tone for a team.
Absolutely.
With younger players. There you go.
That last text, fantastic point.
Agreed, 100%. 960, 960 on the text line. Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, this hour of Flames Talk is underway. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. So if your TV provider does not carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com. Solovyov or Kuznetsov, I think the reason they went Solovyov is because he's got slightly more NHL experience and because they really like the size that he can bring on a third pair and the size he can bring on the penalty kill. And so they went the Solovyov route, and I would be putting him in, no questions asked, against the Avalanche. We'll see if the Flames are thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I would actually be surprised if he didn't play in tomorrow night's game, because I think the Avalanche are somewhat similar to the Maple Leafs. They've got really high-end players, and they're better set up to win high-scoring games than the Flames are. And I think the biggest reason why the Flames lost to the Maple Leafs on Tuesday night is because they got away from playing the way that they have to play. They got away from playing what Ryan Huska would call the right way. And it was almost like they started chasing the game once they tied it at two. Like, they felt like they needed to score four or five goals in order to beat the Maple Leafs last night. So they got into a track meet, and that's just not how the Flames are built. That's not how they're going to have success on a consistent basis. So, you know, I look at the Maple Leafs, and then I think about how the Avalanche are built. And when you've got guys like Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar, and I know that Mikko Rantanen's gone, but they've got some high-end offensive players. You know, I think they're better set up to win a 5-4 game than the Flames are. So, you know, I want a third pairing that is going to give me solid minutes and that's not going to, you know, get hemmed into their own zone and, you know, bleed high-danger scoring chances. And if that happens, probably you're going to give up some goals as well. And when I look at a pairing of Soloviev and Pahal, you know, I think that can be a pretty physically intimidating pairing. The one thing I do wonder about is, you know, will they struggle to get the puck out of the defensive zone when it ends up in there? And it's one of the reasons why I liked Jake Bean playing on the left side of a pairing with Braden Pahal, because you had, I think, two different players who complemented each other's skill sets. But if you're going to leave Bean...
We have lost Eric Wills on his connection, so we'll reconnect on the phone with Willsy as we're underway on our Daily Flames roundtable. And I think we can probably, once we get Willsy back on, we can transition to the next topic. Just something
I was just going to say, I'd be surprised as well if Soloviev isn't in the lineup. I don't necessarily think you recall him at this juncture with the two guys that you still have on your active roster, just to give Soloviev a little bump in the bank account. I think you recall him with purpose.
I just never know. Like, I know sometimes Ryan Huska likes to maybe make sure that there's a little bit of time for a guy to get a practice in. You got to practice in.
Optional.
And it was an optional, yeah. And then there'll be likely an optional morning skate on. It wasn't even an optional, I don't think. I think it was more just a bunch of guys taking maintenance days, which they've got a bunch of right now. We got Willsy back. It's our Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg with you on our Flames Talk and Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday. Okay, and let's transition to what we see Thursday night, and that's the Colorado Avalanche at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Right there in the fight with the Flames and a few other teams. I mean, you take a look at the way things are shaping up in the Western Conference right now, with no disrespect to some of the teams that are two and, I guess, be three games back if you're Utah, St. Louis, etc. Right now, in the mix right now, in the conversation, are Colorado, Los Angeles, Calgary, Vancouver, and maybe Minnesota in that conversation as well, just in terms of, you know, where things sit and some of the jockeying that we could see. Those seem to be the teams that are right there in the conversation. Colorado's one of them. What's our feel on this Avalanche team as we see them play the Flames for the first time this year?
Sorry, I don't know where you lost me there, guys, but I was comparing last night's opponent, the Maple Leafs, to tomorrow night's opponent.
That was kind of like right where we lost you.
So yeah.
Good time to make the transition.
I do think there are some similarities between the two teams. They have obviously both got a number of high-end players, some of the best players in the league, but they're also banged up right now. So, you know, I look at the Avalanche as a team that if you're going to beat them, now is probably the time to do it because of all the guys who are injured and out of the lineup. And, you know, it's still not going to be easy to do because they're coming off of a tough loss to the Canucks last night. So, you know, they're going to be hungry for a pair of points tomorrow night. But a team that the Flames are maybe a little bit deeper than right now, simply because they're not healthy, but healthier. But the Flames don't have the high-end players that the Avalanche do. They don't have a Nathan MacKinnon. They don't have a Cale Makar. But, you know, if the Flames can roll four lines and three pairings and get good goaltending, presumably from Dustin Wolf, then and they play the right way, which I think they got away from doing against the Maple Leafs on Tuesday night, then I think they can beat anybody, including the Avalanche. But, you know, the Avalanche, when healthy, are not a team that I would want to play in a best-of-seven series because they've got two players who can literally put the team on their back and win games for them almost single-handedly in MacKinnon and Makar. And I don't like the Avalanche as much after that trade that they made. And I think Mikko Rantanen was the best player in that trade. And that's with all due respect to Martin Natchez, who I think is a really good player in this league, but still an Avalanche team that, because of their top-end talent and because they've solidified their goaltending with a couple of in-season moves, a team I would not want to play in the playoffs, but if the Flames are going to beat them, now would be a good time to do it because of the injury situation.
So I won't lie and hear me out on this, Pat.
Please don't lie.
When I saw this topic, I'm like, a little eye roll and like, really right there with the Flames. And then surf over the standings. Like, okay, it's a 5-point spread.
Her question.
Then the Flames, I said, don't interrupt. I said, hear me out. This is one of those fights we're talking about. Passion, intensity.
Yeah, emotion. And then the mics will be off and we'll be fine.
So anyways, Flames are 5 back. It's Colorado, but they have 2 games at hand. Well, hold on. Let's put a caveat on here because they had goaltending issues for the first part of the first half of the season. So I went and pulled from acquiring Mackenzie Blackwood. The Colorado Avalanche have 32 points in 26 games, but the Flames have 28 and 25, and there's an if there. But if they were to cash in that extra game, they'd have 30. They'd only be 2 points back from Colorado. So yeah, it as much as I saw it and went like, really? Maybe it's recency bias on my part because Colorado has been such a juggernaut over the course of the last 3-4 years. I'm like, we're really going to put the Flames in with the Avalanche here right now? But statistically, yeah, they're right there. And of course, caveat, Colorado Avalanche goals for differential is +9, Flames are -14. But fact of the matter is, if, and again, it's a big if, they're cashing in games at hand, they're neck and neck. And Wilsey, I'll agree with you. I don't necessarily think the Avalanche are a better team today than they were 2 weeks ago prior to that Rantanen deal. So to be perfectly honest, I thought everything would be hunky-dory for the Avalanche after getting Blackwood, and they can move on from this disastrous start and poor goaltending and, you know, the sky is falling for Colorado. This is a legit conversation we can have now, and it's not something I necessarily would have saw once that Mackenzie Blackwood trade came to fruition.
I mean, look, the Avalanche are still a really good team, and when you've got MacKinnon and McCarty, your point, Wilsey, I mean, they're always going to be a factor, of course, and they definitely have, I mean, since Mackenzie Blackwood has arrived in Colorado, goals against just over .200, .926 save percentage. He has done exactly what they wanted him to do. And they also have been able to get pretty good backup goaltending from Scott Wedgwood. He started 8 games with a .910. Wedgwood's 5-3-0. Blackwood's 12-6-2. They've solved their goaltending in the short term and maybe in the long term as well. So that's no longer like Georgiev and Anonin. And like this was unmitigated, like it was an unmitigated disaster between the pipes until they completely did their facelift. And so that honestly saved their season. You know, we're probably talking about a team that is a little bit more where Vancouver, Calgary, maybe even Utah, St. Louis are if they don't solve their goaltending, which they have. And now it's allowed their talent to go and do what it's done. I'm with you. I mean, I think Rantanen was the best piece in that trade. And I think we all understand why the Avalanche went down the road they did. Didn't feel like it was going in a positive direction when it comes to their contract talks. But I think we're all still surprised they did. Like, I think we understand the reasoning, but doesn't take away the shock value of, holy bleep, you just traded one of the top 10 players in the NHL out of nowhere with really no speculation about it until that Friday night when, Mikko Rantanen's in this trade with Carolina. And they got a good player back in Marty Natchez, who's got a little bit more cost certainty and is under contract. And I still think the Avalanche are a playoff team. I still think they're a really good team. But they're maybe a little bit more top-heavy. And I do think that they play a really, really good brand of hockey. Like, they're a tough team to play against. But without Rantanen, they don't have the same type of – they don't strike you – as
it's not a waste of 8 days anymore.
It's not McDavid Draisaitl anymore, where you're just like always afraid when those two are on the ice. You're still afraid when MacKinnon and Makar are on the ice, but you know, it was MacKinnon and Rantanen as this duo on the power play, and a lot of times 5-on-5, it was terrifying. And so I don't know. I guess what I would say, guys, they're still a really good team. They're a playoff team. I think they're going to be a tough out. They've got good goaltending, and they fixed that, but they don't terrify me the same way as they did after the Rantanen trade.
No, I just don't think they're as deep. Could you imagine how good they would be, though, if Gabriel Landeskog was healthy? And I'm not sure he's ever going to play a game again. I mean, I can't imagine what he's gone through over the last few years. But even Valeri Nichushkin, you add him to the mix, and you know he's a legitimate top six guy. You know, Josh Manson's been banged up. So it's a good team, and certainly it's not going to be an easy game for the Flames tomorrow night. But I do think that there's a depth advantage there. So we'll see if the Flames can use that and play the right way and not try to win a track meet, a shootout with the Avalanche, because I do think that's what got them in trouble against the Maple Leafs last night. So looking forward to what should be a good hockey game at the Dome.
Wilsey, you have yourself a wonderful rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you for morning skate at the Dome Thursday.
All right, guys, I'm going to go shovel for the third time today.
Yeah, and just stay warm.
Feel free to swing by my house and do that too, please. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll be right by.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I live in a condo. I don't know if you know that. I don't need shoveling, but if I did.
And you got Jiffy.
I was going to say, you could get it done in a Jiffy.
If I did, I'd call Jiffy.
Yeah, can you send Jiffy over to my place? I got to get my used drives cleaned out as well.
I think he can set you up with a promo code, Wilsey.
I think that's really good. I think I've got a promo code just for you. Bye, Wilsey.
Bye, guys.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Thanks to Cam and Shan, our outstanding producers this year, this hour, and this year. And that'll start to wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Now time for our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Wednesday edition of Flames Talk. It's brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. And now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Willsy, welcome in. One thing we have not discussed this hour when looking, we spent most of the first half of this hour looking back on the ins and outs of that 6-3 loss to Toronto on Tuesday night. We have not gotten into the news of the day for the Flames, and that is the news on their blue line. The Flames have recalled Ilya Solovyov from the AHL Wranglers to bring them up to 8 active D-men. They were able to do that because, well, 3 or 4 days ago they put Kevin Ball on IR. So Ball on IR opens up the roster spot. They'd been going with 22 on their active roster the last couple of games, and then Wednesday morning the recall of Ilya Solovyov. Just our reaction to recalling a D-man on Wednesday.
Not super surprised after last night's game. Now, I think it was last week. If it wasn't last week, it was the week before when I came on this show and said I would give the guys who have been here a chance because I think they've earned it.
Right,
and
right.
Ryan Huska did. He gave Tyson Barry a chance. Barry hadn't played in 31 games. He was a healthy scratch for 29 straight and then went down to the Wranglers for a couple of games on conditioning. And he's done some good things, especially in the power play since being back in the lineup. And, you know, he's given an opportunity to some other guys to play an increased role. For example, we're seeing Joel Hanley playing on the left side of a pairing with Rasmus Anderson. We're seeing Jake Bean playing on the left side of a pairing with Mackenzie Weegar, two guys who have been, you know, 7-8 guys for parts of the season and have played more minutes in the third pairing than in the top four. And I think for the most part, given what those guys have been asked to do, they've done okay trying to fill spots that are probably a little bit higher up on the depth chart than is ideal for them. And then you've got Daniil Miramanov, and I'm still trying to figure out who he is as a player. And I think the Flames probably feel the same way. So listen, all the guys who have been here, and the Flames have had 8 defensemen on their roster since October 9th when the season started. They've now all been given an opportunity to play a role, to play an increased role. And I just don't think the Flames are getting enough from their blue line right now. And Ryan Huska said as much after last night's loss to the Maple Leafs and, you know, kind of reiterated that when he addressed the media today and also talked about the penalty kill, which has been an Achilles heel for the Flames all season long. And they need someone who can help them on the penalty kill. Is that Ilya Solovyov? Well, I think we're about to find out. And we've talked a lot about how much internal competition there has been in the organization this season, not only at the NHL level, but also at the AHL level to get a call up. So now Solovyov is the first defenseman this season to earn a call up. Let's see what he does with it. It sounds like he'll probably play in tomorrow's game against the Avalanche. They've got a power play that can certainly scare you. So if the Flames do end up on the penalty kill and he gets some PK time, it's a great opportunity for him to show the Flames that he can maybe bring something to the table that the other guys can't. And the Flames, if they're going to make the playoffs, fellas, the penalty kill is going to have to be better from this point on.
Yeah, my reaction to the Flames recalling Solovyov from the Wranglers, unsurprised. I think it was something that, to your point, Wilsey, I think you're 100% right. You had to give the guys that were there that had been good soldiers for you, that had been healthy scratch for 2 months straight, or that were working in and out of the lineup, you had to give them enough leash to see if they could come in and do the job. And I think that they got enough leash in terms of Barry and even in terms of what we've seen from Miramanov over the course of this season. And I'm not sold that the team is sold that those two are everyday options for the Calgary Flames. And given that Ball is out of the lineup, there's an urgency with this group to make sure that your 6D every night are able to go out there and make sure that they're not making significant mistakes that are going to end up in the back of your net. And I think specifically with Barry against the Toronto Maple Leafs, we saw too many glaring sort of issues that prompted the Soloviev recall. And I will say Barry was, I thought he was a very positive impact on the power play on that second unit. But the fact remains is you're using two defensemen on that second unit and three forwards, but you have enough forward depth now, I think, with the acquisition of Frost and Farabee, that you can go back to four forwards, one defenseman, Rasmus Anderson on one unit, Mackenzie Weegar on the other, and roll out two combinations of four forwards where you don't necessarily need Barry in the lineup night in, night out in order to help boost the power play. So what you do need is, one, a left shot, which Soloviev is, two, a guy that skews more defensively, because at the end of the day, you're, you know, if you want to call him your fifth defenseman, your sixth defenseman, your seventh defenseman, wherever they happen to slot, you're more concerned with them not getting scored on than providing offense. And I think Soloviev fits that bill. He can slide in on the penalty kill. I just think the overall scheme of things, Soloviev will fit what Ryan Husk is looking for more than a guy like Barry or Miramanov, will. And that prompts the call up, and hence the fact that I'm not super surprised this happened.
Yeah, I mean, and when we had this conversation last week, the three of us, and you know, during that time, I was a little bit more maybe on the side of go down the recall road, but I also understood where the two of you were coming from, and that, hey, these guys have paid their dues, these guys have been on the roster, these guys have done the bag skates, all that type of stuff, and so give them the first crack. And to Ryan Huska's credit, they did. And it hasn't worked. I mean, Miramanov struggled on the left side despite the win on the road in Seattle. Barry struggled on the left side against both Detroit and now most recently against Toronto. And they need somebody who's more suited to play with Braden Pahal. And if Jake Bean is going to play with Mackenzie Weegar for the time being, which I think we're all on board with, and if Joel Hanley is going to play with Rasmus Anderson right now, well, then they need to have somebody who's a good fit with Pahal in a third-pairing role. And guys, both Ilya Soloviev and Jan Kuznetsov, who are the guys that I was talking about when we spoke about this last week, guys that we were talking about on the post-game show after the game Tuesday night, these guys profile as third-pairing guys in the NHL. And listening to Ilya Soloviev speak at the Dome after an optional practice on Wednesday after getting recalled, like, this guy knows what he's all about and knows what he's here to do. He knows that he's here to be a stay-at-home D-man. He knows that he is here to keep it simple, make sure his defensive details are taken care of. And whether he plays with Weegar or whether he plays with Anderson or whether he plays with Pahal, he knows he just needs to keep it simple. You know, if it was me, no questions asked, he's playing Thursday. I don't know if that'll be what Ryan Huska decides to do, but I just think you've seen enough, and you've seen both. You've seen what it looks like with Ball out when Barry's on the third pair or Miramanov's on the third pair. I think you've got a pretty good idea as to what the high end is and, unfortunately, what the low end is. And so if it's me, I'm making that decision against Colorado on Thursday and not hesitating. But that's me. I don't make the calls. Ryan Huska and his coaching staff make the calls. I don't know if Soloviev is going to get in or not against the Avalanche on Thursday night. But I just think with a left shot, with a guy who profiles as a third pair stay-at-home defenseman and who can be a good complement to what Pahal does on the right side, I think that's what they've needed. And so whether it